Dear God, make your word alive as Rich prayed so well, please. Amen. I know many of you personally. I don't know all of you well personally. But if you are a serious Christian, I know something about your last few weeks. What I know is, though they have had some joys, you have not always found it easy to be a Christian. There are numerous ways in which we don't find it easy to be Christian. Some of them have to do with struggling with sins. But today, I want to speak from the Bible about how God meets us when it is not easy to be a Christian in our trying to do what is good, what is right, trying to live in a way that pleases him. And we'd like to do it through John chapter 11. During the months where I wasn't in church, I was studying John 11 a fair amount and was prepared the first week I came back to speak from John 11. And then, in totally appropriate manner, one of the guest speakers spoke from my passage and the week before. And so I was just thinking about where to go and what to do. So what we're going to look at today is not what would be a first sermon that I would preach from John 11, because it's the story of the raising of Lazarus from the dead. But it would be the second sermon that I would preach, which would be my first, because that subject was well covered by the guest speaker who spoke here today. From John chapter 11, starting with verse 1. Now a man named Lazarus was sick. He was from Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. This Mary, whose brother Lazarus now lay sick, was the same one who poured perfume on the Lord and wiped his feet with her hair. So the sister sent word to Jesus, "Lord, the one you love is sick." When he heard this, Jesus said, "This sickness will not end in death. No, it is for God's glory, so that God's Son may be glorified through it." Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. Yet when he heard that Lazarus was sick, he stayed where he was 2 more days. Then he said to his disciples, "Let's go back to Judea." "But Rabbi," they said, "a short while ago the Jews tried to stone you there, and yet you were going back?" Jesus answered, "Are there not 12 hours of daylight? A man who walks by day won't stumble, for he sees by this world's light. It is when he walks by night that he stumbles, for he has no light." After he had said this, he went on to tell them, "Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I am going there to wake him up." His disciples replied, "Lord, if he sleeps, he'll get better." Jesus had been speaking of his death, but his disciples thought he meant natural sleep. So then he told them plainly, "Lazarus is dead. And for your sake, I am glad I was not there, so that you may believe. But let us go to him." Then Thomas, called Didymus, which word means twin, by the way. Then Thomas, called Didymus, said to the rest of the disciples, "Let us also go, that we may die with him." For 6 chapters in the Gospel of John, it has been no fun being a follower of Jesus. Chapter 5, we read that the Jews tried hard to kill him. Chapter 7, we read, the Jews there were waiting to take his life. Later in chapter 7, we read Jesus saying, "Why are you trying to kill me?" Chapter 8, Jesus said to the people, "You are determined to kill me." Chapter 8 again, the crowd, quote, picked up stones to stone him, but Jesus hid himself. Chapter 10, again, the Jews picked up stones to stone him. Later in chapter 10, again, they tried to seize him, but he escaped. And so we read at the end of chapter 10, verse 40, that Jesus and his disciples left Judea because these things took place in Jerusalem. And, quote, they went back across the Jordan River to where John the Baptist had been baptizing in the early days, and here he stayed. In other words, they left the area known as Judea, that Jerusalem is the pinnacle of, and they crossed the Jordan River at least 25 miles away from Jerusalem, where it felt safe. Now, in Judea, let's make sure we get the story clear. In Judea, there was a small town with a little family that later became famous. This family had two sisters and a brother. One of the neat things about this family, I think, is that they were all single, and how Jesus loved these people. The Gospel of Luke tells us that they would open their home to him, and that Jesus was especially fond of them. In our passage in verse 5, it says Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So when a sickness hit, they sent word to him. And we clearly know it wasn't just because Lazarus had a head cold. So Jesus said, when the messenger came, this sickness is not going to end in death. It's going to end in God's glory. Now, that's an interesting point, but that's not the point that we're looking at here this morning. So his disciples doubtless relaxed when Jesus says that this sickness won't end in death, because they're thinking, oh, good, then Jesus won't need to go back to that dangerous place. Whew. 2 days later, Jesus said to his disciples, now, let's go back to Judea. That is, let's go to Bethany, where Lazarus lives. That is, let's go to a town that's only 2 miles from Jerusalem. That snake pit of hostility. That place where the authorities were trying to put him in shackles. That place when angry men listening to him stood there fingering rocks ready to throw. And so the disciples said in verse 8, Master, they tried to stone you in Judea. You want to go back to the same neighborhood? Now, the disciples seem concerned for him, and doubtless they had some concern for him. But more deeply, they had concern, almost everybody agrees, for their own necks, because they're hanging around him. And if they're going to drag him off and kill him, they're liable to drag us off and kill him. We'll all be killed. In response to that, in verse 9 and following, Jesus said, guys, are there not 12 hours of daylight? A man who walks by day won't stumble, for he sees by the sun, by this world's light. It's when he walks by night that he stumbles, for he has no light. You know what that's like. You go out to your garage at nighttime, and you trip over the lawnmower, and you trip over the rake that your kid left there that you didn't know was going to be there. That is, what he's saying is, listen, if you walk at nighttime, you're going to trip. If you walk in the daytime, it's safe. Following God's will is like walking in the daytime. It's safe. And for me, God's will is that I go and see Lazarus. And he said to them, Lazarus is asleep. I am going to wake him. There's much in that verse that is fascinating to think about, but that's not what we're thinking about today. And so his disciples say, oh no, don't go. If he's asleep, sleep is good. He'll recover. The fever's probably broken. And then Jesus said, he's dead. I'm glad I wasn't there so that you may learn to believe more. What a powerful sentence, and how full of important thoughts. But that's not what we're talking about today. And then Jesus said, let's go to Judea. Now we come to our focus today in verse 16. And then Thomas said to the rest of the disciples, let us also go so that we may die with him. Let us also go so that we may die with him. Now, Thomas was one of the 12 apostles. We in this room are not among the 12 apostles, but we are disciples like they were. We are followers like they were. Many of us are Christian leaders in this room. And so Thomas's words apply very much to every true Christian here. And we come to the first great principle that this verse teaches us, and it's this, that at some point, Christian disciples, and especially Christian leaders, will be asked to die as they follow Christ. At some point, every Christian disciple, and especially Christian leaders, will be asked to die as they follow Christ. Now, this dying, of course, can be literal. Thomas certainly was speaking literally when he said, "Let's go and die with him." Thomas was thinking, "We're going to be stoned to death." And this was literal for all his fellow apostles as well. Stephen, who was the first Christian martyr, was stoned to death in the early church just a few years after this. James was killed by the sword. Peter was, according to tradition, crucified. And all through church history, Christians have literally died. The early Christians faced the lions. John Wycliffe, who translated the Bible into English, was burned at the stake. Dietrich Bonhoeffer, the pastor, Lutheran pastor in Germany, was hanged by the Nazis. Christians under ISIS, when they held large swaths of land, had their throats slit. Dying, as you follow Jesus, can be literal. But dying can also be figurative, a slow, grinding death as we go through life, a series of lesser deaths. What did dying look like for the Apostle Paul, which may shed light on this? Well, the Apostle Paul, of course, faced literal death all the time. But also, he said something interesting in 1 Corinthians 15:31 that so relates to those of us in this room. He says in that epistle, brothers, he says, "I die every day." I mean that, he says. Now, of course, this explains then. It explains what he thought of when he faced hunger all the time and cold sometimes from having insufficient clothes in prison, when he was thirsty, when he had to travel in a time when travel was uncomfortable. All these things are dying, but we don't usually associate that with dying. So Paul wrote something in 2 Corinthians 11, verse 28, that talks more clearly about what he means about dying daily in a way that you and I would die daily, when he says, quote, "I daily face the pressures of my concern for all the churches." Do you see the parallel of these two verses? 1 Corinthians 15:31, "I die daily." 2 Corinthians 11:28, "Daily I face certain pressures as a Christian leader." Now, these pressures that Paul faced as the person who founded all these churches and cared for all of them and had the burden of seeing them flourish with all the problems that came up, these pressures were avoidable pressures, just like many of yours are avoidable. He could have lived an easier life. He could have chosen to live a life where his time was his own instead of the life he lived where his time was not his own. And yet he says that love for Christ drove him. And he calls this being driven by Christ to minister to other people when it was costly and hard and sometimes miserable. He calls that a being dead, a dying with Jesus. Now, in several of his letters, he describes vividly what it looks like, and he uses figures of speech for a Christian, for him in particular, to die as he serves other people. Here's what it looks like. In 2 Corinthians 4, in describing what it was like to be in the Christian ministry, he says in verse 11, "We are always being given over to death." That's really vivid if you think about it. The word "given over" there is the same word that usually we would use in the context of law enforcement, where the police catch a guy and they hand him over to the warden or to the prison guard. Paul says, as a Christian minister, and for you as a serious Christian trying to live your life in a way that's sometimes costly, it's like constantly you are being handed over to someone. And the someone you're being handed over to, he says, we are always being handed over to death. Every day, the pressures he faced as a Christian trying to live seriously felt like somebody was grabbing him and handing him over to death. The idea is that he's by force being taken somewhere that is not natural to go. Another vivid metaphor that he uses for what it's like to live as a Christian who's serious is in 2 Corinthians 4, verse 12. Listen to this little verse. He says, speaking of him and his fellow apostles, "Death is at work in us." What an odd phrase. Death is at work in us. But think of an illness. that you might have. Now think of an illness, not just that you have, but an illness that gets worse, that's progressive, an illness that spreads. Maybe think about cancer. It is in you, but then it grows and it's active and it metastasizes. That's what he's talking about. He says, as I go through life as a Christian worker, death is active. It's energetic. It's doing something in me. And so he feels the cumulative effect of many years of death growing in him, as it were, as he lays down his life to serve Christ and his kingdom and other people. Well, if that's what it looked like for the Apostle Paul to live a life in which he goes and dies with Jesus, what does that look like for you? Well, there are opportunities for Christians to die everywhere, all the time, every day, in every place. Let me just mention a few to illustrate. You die when you live in such a way as to risk hostility from a secular world. You die when you risk hostility from a secular world, from how you live. Thomas, of course, was afraid he was going to die because he was going to run into fanatically religious people, that is, Jewish people that hated Christianity at the time. You face a death of a kind when you live like you should around people who consider biblical Christianity a fanatical religion. When there are things that you simply will not do because you're a Christian. When there are ideas that you absolutely will not embrace because you're a Christian. When there are things said that you will not nod in agreement to pleasantly because you're a Christian. When there are times that you cannot safely remain silently as things are going being said, you were facing death. And so we might say with Thomas, let us go and stand out uncomfortably among our secular friends that we may die with Jesus. Another way that for you and I to die with Jesus is when, by being a Christian, we interact with people that we are not naturally attracted to. My father was a most wonderful example of this to me. My dad worked hard both at his job and when he came home at church and among people. And very rarely did I see him go out to our front porch on a night like it was last evening. Wasn't it beautiful out there? We'd go out into his front porch to just sit, maybe read a newspaper and relax. And so many times when I saw him just try to take a few minutes like this, here he comes down the road. We had a neighbor that had a broken leg. I can't remember how he got it. And so he had a big cast and crutches, and you could see him hobbling about from a block away down because he saw Charlie out on the front porch. Okay, so up he came on the front porch, and this guy wasn't terrible, but he was a real talker, and he was a bit of an odd character, and he shows up. And so Dad lays down his newspaper, and he talks with the man, and he listens to the man. Sometimes for a pretty long time. This is a form of dying when he did that. People that are not naturally attractive to you, but that for Christ's sake you interact with and spend time with and listen to, they pull us into small deaths. Death to what you'd rather do. Death to whom you'd rather speak with. Dad was mirroring Thomas. And you might mirror Thomas in the same kind of way. I call it a death because, well, think about what somebody looks like who has recently fallen in love. Everybody was around someone who fell in love and they say something like this, oh, I feel so alive. Contrast it to when you talk to someone who was recently trapped in a boring conversation and they say, I was dying in that conversation. This is the kind of small death that Christians are called to. Let us go sit on the porch with a neighbor we are not naturally attracted to so that we may die with Jesus. How else might dying with Jesus look? Well, you're planning your week ahead and you're thinking, okay, now I must do items A and B and C. I've got to do that term paper by Friday and I've got to clean my room. But then you think, there are things I must do, but there are also things that I want to do and I look forward to doing. I want to do this and that or the other. I want to make sure I go to that soccer game. I want to make sure I go to my friend's sleepover. And then you think about things maybe you should do. The youth group is having a service project. We're all supposed to go over and rake leaves at someone's house who's too crippled to rake leaves. Maybe he had knee surgery and he's a pain in the neck. I don't know. And so you think, am I going to grab my rake? Am I going to go, oh, it's the same night that I was going to go over to my friend's sleepover. What do I do that? And, my close friends are not going to be there. How do we die with Thomas? Let us put important but costly things on our calendars so that we may die with Jesus. How else might dying look for you on a given week? Well, a number of you are Christian leaders here in this room. Some of you are Christian leaders in a Christian school. You're in the administration. You teach. Others of you are Christian leaders. You lead a Bible study. You teach a Sunday school class. You're a small group leader. You're an elder. You're a deacon. Well, recall what Paul said about his dying. He says, remember when he said in Corinthians, I feel the pressure of my concern for all the churches. Being a Christian leader is pressure because of your ministry to other people. Anybody in this room feel any pressure because of being a Christian leader? For instance, let's suppose that you serve other people who don't take seriously the sacrifice that you make. They don't take seriously the same things that you're taking seriously. For instance, let's suppose you lead a small group or a Bible study and you study hard for it. And then you get there, and any number of people are a no-show. And maybe it's legitimate. They were sick, or their kid is sick. But maybe they say to you, obliviously, oh, yeah, we didn't come last week. We went down to the flower show in Philadelphia. Oh, last week I didn't come. I was tired. And especially if you're working through a series where each week's study is dependent upon knowing what the last week's study for. And people just don't show. You study, but people don't prepare like we all agreed we would prepare. There's a dying aspect of that as a Christian leader. Or let's suppose that you're trying to teach a class of some kind or lead a discussion and people are off topic. You're leading a study on prayer. Someone raises their hand. Yes? Is Putin the Antichrist? Well then, it's a form of dying to lead a group when that kind of thing happens. It's a small death, but it's a death. Or when you're trying to have a time of prayer and you say, let's share a prayer request. What can we pray for each other as Christians? Yeah, we're going on vacation next week. Pray that we have a really good time. Oh, that is priceless. You do want them to have a good time. They need a break. They need a rest. But is there nothing more important to pray for than that they have a good time? It's a form of dying. And sometimes you die as a Christian leader because people will put you in impossible situations. Someone will take you aside because they know you are an elder. They know you are a leader in the women's ministry. And they say, listen, I think that Linda is having an affair. I can't prove it, but I'm pretty sure of it. Could you please do something? But you can't tell her that I said anything. What do you do with that? You're in an impossible situation, and you feel the weight of it. This is a form of dying. It's a form of dying as a Christian leader when you're thrown into situations that you're totally inadequate for. You are a small group leader, and you get a phone call from one of the people in your church saying, I just found that my daughter is cutting herself. What do I do? And you don't know what to do. You've never had a daughter who is cutting herself. You've never studied those kinds of issues. And yet you're called upon to help. And maybe all the while where these pressures are on you, simultaneously you feel tired or you are spiritually low or your marriage has been a little tense lately or your kids have been misbehaving or your job is insecure or your finances are killing you or your headaches are killing you or your prayers don't reach the ceiling. Let us serve as leaders in Christ's kingdom when it feels unrewarding so that we may go and die with Jesus. That is what he's talking about. Now, in all these examples, of course, dying is unpleasant. And for mature Christians, this kind of dying is simply unpleasant. We see it in our text when Jesus says, let's go back to Judea. And when the disciples' reaction shows, they had no desire to go back to Judea. They said, but Rabbi, a short time ago, they're trying to kill you. You want to go back? We don't want to go back. It's unpleasant. Or when Jesus says, Lazarus is asleep. I am going to wake him. Oh, no. Lord, if he sleeps, he'll get better. He will. He'll get better. He'll be fine. I don't want to go back. In summary, at some point, Christian disciples, and especially Christian leaders, will be asked to die as you follow Christ. That's the first great principle. It's the longest. A second great principle from our passage. When followers of Christ die, they are dying with Jesus. When followers of Christ die, they're dying with Jesus. Verse 16, Thomas said, let us also go so that we may die with him. Thomas's words here make us love him. Does it not make you love the man that he said that, though he was scared to death? And when he said, let us die with him, he spoke higher than he knew. Because a great principle of Christian ministry is that Christian ministry is not just a dying for Jesus. It is a dying with Jesus. Thomas is describing you if you are living like a serious Christian. Here's how the Apostle Paul put it in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 10. Talking about himself and his fellow apostles and fellow missionaries as they travel about giving the gospel in difficult places. He says, quote, we always carry around in our body death. Think about that. We carry around in our body death. The word carry around is the word for bearing a burden. I mean, I would paraphrase it. We lug around in our body a big heavy sack, and it's called death. But he doesn't just say we carry around in our body death. He says we carry around in our body the death of Jesus. What in the world is he talking about? He's talking about your union with Christ. That as a Christian, as you face frustrations and weariness and tensions in your ministry, Christ is facing these things with you, in you, and through you. The doctrine, as I say, is the doctrine that is so poorly taught and thought about in Christian circles, the doctrine of your union with Jesus Christ. The idea is this, that the world's sin was terribly costly to remedy. And so Jesus paid the cost by dying, by purchasing redemption. But you pay a cost by dying, by carrying that redemption to other people, by giving it to other people, by living it before other people, by applying the death of Jesus Christ to their lives, by your service to them. That's what he's talking about. Here's another way the Apostle Paul talked about our dying, not just for Christ, but with Christ as we live as serious Christians. 1 Corinthians 6:10, he says, he who unites himself with the Lord, here's this remarkable phrase, he who unites himself with the Lord, that is with Jesus, is one with him in spirit. Do you ever think about that? As you minister, Christ is dwelling in you. He is shepherding you. He is going with you. And he feels for you as you experience the thousand little deaths in your living as a serious Christian. He feels the weariness you feel. He feels the hostility you face. He feels the inconvenience that you undergo. Listen to these verses from Scripture about how our God feels with us as we suffer for his sake and thus suffers with us. Isaiah 63, verse 9. He's talking about Israel being in the desert with all the sufferings in the wilderness. Isaiah 63, 9. In all their distress, God too was distressed. Have you thought about this week? About that as you faced little deaths? Here's the way it puts it in Judges chapter 16, verse 10. when the Israelites had worshipped idols, so God let them be conquered by foreign people and put into slavery, we read, then the Israelites got rid of the foreign gods among them, and they served the Lord, and he could bear Israel's misery no longer. He could bear Israel's misery no longer. Or listen to how it's put in Acts chapter 9, verse 4. Stephen is being stoned to death. And after he's stoned to death, the Apostle Paul, who gave a thumbs up on it, is out persecuting other Christians. And then Jesus appears to Paul from heaven, who at that time is still called Saul. And he says, Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting? You know how to finish that sentence, don't you? Why are you persecuting me? Well, Jesus had already died. Jesus had already been raised and gone to heaven. And yet as Paul is persecuting Jesus' followers, Jesus says, you are persecuting me. And here's the way it's put in 1 Samuel chapter 8, verse 10. When the Israelites reject Samuel, even though he had given himself to those people his entire life, God said, Samuel, quote, it is not you they have rejected. They have rejected me. Christ is in you, with you, suffering through you and with you as you suffer. Christ feels your pain, especially as you die when you minister to other people. So as I said, as Stephen was stoned, he looks up into heaven. And we read in his last moments before dying, he says, he was given a vision of heaven. And he says, see, I see heaven open. And if I may, I see the Son of Man standing at the right hand of God. Here was our Savior enthroned in heaven. But as the first Christian martyr dies a most painful death, the Son of God stands in honor of him and to welcome him because he feels with him. This is what it means that we suffer with Christ. I have heard many teachers and preachers speak as if, or for that matter, small group leaders maybe, as if the primary way that I minister to people is by teaching them. Or the primary way that I minister to people is by preaching to them. There is an element of truth to that, but most of me wants to say from the New Testament perspective, no, 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 no. The primary way you minister to anyone is by dying for them, with them on their behalf through the power of Christ. Jesus said in John 12, 24, unless a kernel of wheat fall into the ground and dies, it remains only a single seed. But if it dies, it produces many seeds. That's what Christian ministry is all about. So Paul, speaking about this dying that he does on behalf of the obnoxious Christians in the Corinthian church, which if you've ever read 1 and 2 Corinthians, you know how difficult these people were. Paul, speaking of his ministry to these obnoxious Christians, says this. 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 12. Writing to the Corinthians, he says, by the way, when he says us in this verse, he's talking about himself and his fellow missionaries. You Corinthians, death is at work in us, but life is at work in you. That is the way by which he brings them life, is to sacrificially and painfully do what's right and good for them, which is a form of death. As he dies more and more, the people around him that he touches live more and more. This is what the Christian life is all about. As Paul brings Christ's message in all Paul's weakness, and as he suffers for it, that's what he's talking about. And that's why he says in 2 Corinthians 12, verse 9 and 10, I delight in weaknesses, in insults, in hardships, and persecutions, and in difficulties, so that Christ's power may rest on me. Do you get that? Christ's power rests on him, flows through him as he dies through hardships, persecutions, weaknesses, insults, and difficulties. So the summary of the second great point is this. Our dying in Christian ministry is not just a dying for Christ. It is a dying with Christ. The third and yet shorter great principle from our passage, the words of Thomas, is this. Followers of Christ encourage each other to die. Followers of Christ encourage each other to die. That's part of the reason you're here this morning. Sure, you're here to sing praises. And sure, you're here to pray silently as prayers are given aloud. And sure, you're here to hear the Bible. But you are also here to meet each other, to listen to each other, to say helpful words with each other, to weep with those who weep, and to rejoice with those who rejoice. Fellow Christians encourage each other to die, build each other up so that they in turn will go out and live a life of dying. And finally, the fourth and last great principle from this remarkable little verse of the words of Thomas is this. When followers of Christ are willing to die with him, God uses them despite their weaknesses. When followers of Christ are willing to die with him, God uses them despite their weaknesses. Did any Christian drag any weaknesses into this room today? You feel it in your body? You feel it in your spiritual life and soul? You feel it in your telephone? You just do. It just happens. These things happen. We all have a weakness. So, I ask you this. Was Thomas, who said these words, was he strong? Would you consider Thomas among the stronger of the apostles? Well, think about him. Not terribly long after this time, Jesus is in Gethsemane, and we read that as the soldiers come to arrest him, quote, then all his disciples deserted him and fled. Now, there's a strong disciple for you, is it not? Think about Thomas's nickname to ask whether he is a strong disciple. What is he known as? He's known as, of course, Doubting Thomas. The other disciples were in a room. Thomas had happened to be out when Jesus appeared to them after the resurrection. And then when Thomas came back, they said, Thomas, we have seen the Lord. And Thomas said in that great confession of faith, unless I see the marks in his hands and I finger where his nails were and I put my hand into his side, I will not believe it. How about that? There you go. Great, strong Thomas. And yet, in his best moments, despite the weak man that he was in many ways, he said, let us go that we may die with him. This is the remarkable paradox of the Christian life. There will be many times when you are at your spiritual absolute lowest. And at the worst possible time, when you least expect it, you are confronted with a need to say or do something or make a decision that you wish you would have been able to go for 2 hours and pray yourself to get ready for. And what do you do there? And many times, God will help you in that weak moment do something you were not capable of doing yourself. I often think of it like this. When I was a youth director, every year, our youth group would go to a certain lake, and they had a high dive, and it was high. And we were all scared to go off of it, to dive off of it particularly, and I'm no diver. But every year, I would want to renew my manhood. And so I would, after standing there 30, 40 minutes, I would go head first and dive off. Now, the great thing about it is, I did not have to make that decision all the way down. I only had to make it for a second, and then the deed was done. How many times has a Christian been in a conversation where everything that the Bible stands for is being mocked, where everything that that Christian believes in is being ridiculed, where that Christian has the great temptation just to keep his head low out of the range of fire, and he can hardly or she can hardly bring himself to say what he should. And he's in no way prepared to give a grand speech. And he's in no way prepared intellectually to really argue the point. He's in no way prepared to dialogue and debate with people who are far more intelligent than he or she, perhaps. But he says, I'm sorry, you're wrong. I can't believe that. You don't need to talk yourself all the way down to the water now. Then you just need to take a second and give the word. And now you're already committed. And in your weakness, God will use you. And this is what he does. And this is, I believe, what Thomas did in his best moment. Let us go with him that we may also die with him. He was saying, in essence, Lord, I don't want to die. Would you please pry my fingers off of my own life? Help me with this. Okay, so here was weak Thomas being described to us in the Bible who are gathered today as weak Christians. How did it end with Thomas? Did God use him? Did God work through him as he died with Christ? Did life come to other people as he died? Did his dying give life to others? Well, many people for many centuries have believed that Thomas was the one who first brought the gospel to India, not just to southern India, but up into the thick of it in northern India, where he was killed. Let's assume for a moment that that's inaccurate, although it has a deep history. Did it work for Thomas that God used his weakness and dying to bring life to other people? Well, let me ask you this. When you read John chapter 11 and you see weak Thomas saying, let us go and die with him, does it not help you? Does it not encourage you? Does it not make you want to say, Lord, help me to do that. I want to do what this man did. Here we are 2,000 years after this man lived, and we're still talking about what he did, and it encourages us. Life is coming to us because of the way he died there. But even more grandly, think about this. The book of Revelation talks about the end of time when we all arrive in the new Jerusalem. And it pictures Jerusalem as a city with 12 foundations. Don't picture 12 foundations like pizza boxes stacked on each other. Picture a city with enormous foundational stones on the bottom, you know, three on the side, three on the side, three on this side, and three on that side. And it says in Revelation 21:14, the wall of the city, remember, this is heaven now. This is the new Jerusalem. This is the end of time. This is the great finale. The wall of the city had 12 foundations. And on them were the names of the 12 apostles. Matthew, Peter, John, Philip, Thomas. He will be eternally honored, this weak man, for the grace God gave him to die with Jesus. And thus, in his life, came true the same that can come true in your life. What Paul wrote in 2 Timothy 2:11. If we died with him, we will also live with him. Brothers and sisters, your life is very short. You have very little time. Those of you who are young have very little time. Those of you who are old have even less time. You only have so many years of life in which you can die. Die while you're still alive. Take a moment to pray about these things, and then we'll hear the benediction. While your heads are bowed, before the benediction, I needed to say one more thing. It is possible that as you are listening, you are not yet a Christian. What Thomas would say to you is this: you are not ready yet to die with Jesus. That is not the way that you were in God's favor. What you need to do is to wrap your mind around the fact that Jesus died for you. And trust yourself to that. And when that happens, then God will help you to die with Jesus. Would you please stand for the benediction? Hear the words that Moses spoke to Joshua and to all Israel. Be strong and courageous. It is the Lord who goes before you. He will be with you. He will not leave you or forsake you.